the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast. And in this podcast, I wanted to talk about mindset. And in order to speak about mindset, I was thinking, who is the best person that I can get access to that can operate at such a level, who has trained other people through the NLP processes, who's an international speaker, and just can go in and deal with those mindset issues that people have? And I thought, let's go to Johnny Cass. So, Johnny, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks, mate. It's great to be here.
It's my pleasure. I really appreciate having you on all the way from Australia. So it's 8:30 in the morning for me. What time is it there for you, Johnny?
Well, it's 8:30 for you. It's, I believe, summer there for you. And it's 5:30 p.m. for me. And it's winter time here. And I got to say, having lived in London for 5 years, my winter is probably on par easily with your spring, if not your summer. So for the time being, I'm happy to be back home in Sydney.
Yeah, well, I live in Spain, and even winter in Spain is similar to our summer here in England. So.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, actually. You're right. Spain, I've been to Spain a few times. It definitely reminds me of being back home in Australia, absolutely.
And so when you came to London, what were you doing in London for 5 years?
Well, at that point in time, I was contracted out to an American-based company. A lot of your listeners will probably know me back then because that's where they would have met me. At that point in time, I was working for a gentleman by the name of Chris Howard. So yeah. I was traveling around the world a lot, and London just seemed like the perfect base with which to do that from.
Excellent. And so I did my NLP training through Chris Howard. In fact, you were the trainer on some of those trainings as well. I remember Billionaire Bootcamp
awesome.
In Portugal. And it was just mind-blowing, the trainings that I went through then, the learnings that I got that I still implement today and yeah. that I pass on to other people. You know, we all go through stuff, don't we?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And I love what you're saying there in regards to those trainings that, you know, for me, one of the great joys and one of the great pleasures that I have, you know, outside of obviously being very blessed and very fortunate to have traveled around the world, you know, is having conversations with people like yourself or the many other people whose lives who I've touched to. Many years later, say exactly what you're just saying to me. I learned what you taught me at those trainings, and I'm still applying those techniques in your own life. So that's so great to hear.
And how did you get into personal development?
Oh, wow. How did I get into personal development? Well, it's funny because I was just down in Melbourne last weekend, and I was speaking to an audience of 800 people for a company I'm doing some work for at the moment. And, you know, the reason why I got into personal development is really mostly because, as it is for a lot of people, at that point in time, you know, I felt like I'd really captured some opportunities, but I also felt like I'd really missed out on some opportunities. And I'd also come out of a TV show here in Australia like 11, 13 years ago, however many years ago it was. I think you know this. I happened to be on the very first Australian Big Brother in Australia, which was just phenomenal yes. experience. But what you never see from those reality TV programs is that after a while, like I said, I felt like I'd missed out on certain opportunities. And to be really honest with you, I felt like I was a bit of a failure personally. And I found myself in what, looking back now, I could only describe as being in some sort of a mild depression. And I was at a crossroads from a career point of view, so I was thinking, well, let's go and study psychotherapy, and maybe at the same time I can fix myself up. And then I decided psychotherapy wasn't for me, and somebody introduced me to coaching. And, you know, before you knew it, I was just opened up to this whole different way of looking at the world and a whole different mindset about how to approach the world. And it just shifted from there. I saw a guy up on the stage, and I thought to myself, yep, that's exactly what I want to do, and I am committed to doing that, and 15 years later, here I am.
Amazing. And so that's been quite a journey for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's been a phenomenal journey, and, you know, a lot of speakers or trainers, coaches, motivational speakers, whatever you want to call me, you know, some of them would have you believe that it's always an easy ride. And to be honest with you, Daniel, it's been anything but an easy ride. I think life in general is like that, whether we like it or not. I know plenty of bad things that happen to good people, and I know that life seems unfair at times. And, you know, whether it's myself or any other speaker, we're all people at the end of the day. And there's been some highs, there's been some lows, there's been some good times, there's been some bad times. And I think that's what makes it all exciting at the end of the day.
Yeah, I totally agree. What I want to drill down on specifically is the idea or the concept that, you know, you see somebody on stage and that their life is just amazing every single day. And if it's not for some reason, as Tony Robbins would say, you just change it. And yet sometimes I don't think you should change it. You know, if you wake up in a bad mood, then go through the bad mood. You can't, I don't believe you should just change it automatically just because things, you don't feel good. There's a reason why you don't feel good. There's a message coming through. And if you just turn that off, you're not getting the message.
Daniel. You're speaking music to my ears, my friend. Absolutely. Like, you know, I remember when I first started speaking, and I probably would have subscribed to the somewhat earlier notion that what you were talking about, which is what a lot of coaches espouse out there, which is, you know, if you're not feeling good, then just change your state and just, you know, ignore those feelings that are there. And I couldn't agree with you more, my friend. You know, I came back to Australia. Some people do or don't know why I came back from the UK. Like, I lived there for 5 years, and I came back to Australia for a variety of reasons, but mostly because Australia was calling me. You know, my career had taken a bit of a turn while I was in the UK. My health had taken a bit of a turn. I'd broken up from a relationship, and my mother was also diagnosed with leukemia. And I remember when I came back to Australia, for the first 6 months, people were saying to me, okay, so you're back in Australia, what are you going to do now? And I can honestly say to you that for the first 6 months, at least while I was here, I was stuck in hopelessness, helplessness, resignation. And when people asked me where you were going, what was I doing, my answer was, I don't know. And for a motivational speaker to utter those words for the first time in his life was without a doubt probably one of the most scariest times in my life. And, you know, there were definitely times when I would try and force an answer, or times when I would do exactly what you were just saying, try and change my emotional states. And on some levels I did. Like, I would exercise in the morning, I would do yoga, I would make sure that I wasn't just sitting in complete apathy. Like, I was still learning, yes. I was still educating myself. But I just knew that I had to just be with the unpleasantness and be with the uncomfortable of it all for a change, rather than doing stuff. Because I had to just surrender to whatever you want to call it, a higher power, my voice is inside of me, something inside of me that just said, Johnny Cass, for once in your life, just surrender to not knowing the answers, and then just trust that the answers will come out the other side. Now, yeah. Again, that doesn't mean that I just sat there as a complete blob and did nothing. You know, I was still looking, I was still doing some soul searching about this time in my life. But, you know, when people asked me how I was doing, like, to my intimate, my close personal friends, I would be honest. I would say, I'm scared. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm doing. And I'm going to trust the process. So I totally agree with you. And it's the fine balance of, you know, just feeling those feelings, but let's also not wallow in those feelings for too long. Yeah. Like, then that becomes just self-indulgent, becomes counterproductive. And, you know, people then find a convenient excuse to spend 10, 20 years of their life depressed. Well, that's not you doing something about getting out of your circumstances.
You see, it's interesting because there's people listening to this podcast and they are where you were back then. And they will be thinking in their mind, they'll be asking them questions like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I just get on and do something? Yeah. And I think there's two things that are happening here. One is usually a lack of focus or a lack of direction. Or in other words, a lack of just stuff to do. Mm. If you don't know where you're going, it doesn't matter what you're going to do because it's not going to help you in the future anyway.
Yeah.
And then the other side of that is a term coined by, I think it was coined by Buckminster Fuller, which is precession.
Yes.
Which is, as long as you keep going forward and you keep doing something, something will pop up along the way that will steer you in the right course of direction, if you like.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to our listeners that are listening and are maybe in that place where I've just talked about, where maybe you are sitting in, you know, hopelessness and resignation and apathy, you know, during some of my darkest hours, and again, like anybody, I've had dark hours, I've had great hours, I've had amazing hours. I actually find it way more interesting to talk about the dark hours and how I overcame those situations or other people overcame those situations. It's always easy to talk about the joyful, happy times. It's like, okay, well, how did you overcome the dark hours? And in talking about the dark hours, it gives other people permission to talk about it, and we should talk about it. I think in, you know, Western culture especially, you know, we put on this facade that I'm happy and I'm successful and my life is wonderful and my life is amazing. And as you were just saying a little bit earlier, that then doesn't give you the permission to talk about what you need to do in order to move forward. And yeah. In my darkest hours, and those darkest hours were probably the 9 days that my mother was dying in hospital, you know, and even leading up to that and after that, you know, one of the greatest things, well, a couple of the greatest things that really came to the surface was, number one, the Serenity Prayer, which is such a beautiful prayer, which is, grant, and I hope I remember it, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things that I can and the wisdom to know the difference between the two. So at wherever you are right now, if people are having a hard time, do exactly what you were just saying, Daniel. Differentiate between what are the things that are in your control and what are the things that are not in your control. So, you know, there was no doubt that my mother was going to pass away, for example. There was no doubt that I was back in Australia. There was no doubt that I was also a little bit lacking, like, focus about where it is I was going. I couldn't do much about my mother's death. I was in Australia. I couldn't do much about that. But what I could do a lot about was how I was going to choose to respond to those situations. Did I feel sadness? Absolutely. Did I have awful days? Absolutely. But even in those days, I would still do something that was in my control. So I would still hit the gym. I would still do some learning. I would still do some teaching in amongst it all. And then also I stopped asking myself, what did I want from life? But I started asking, well, what does life want from me? What if God, whatever you want to call it, my higher power, whatever it is that you want, what do you want me to do? And if that answer was just keep looking for now, well, then just keep looking.
And in terms of motivation now, see, I always find it interesting that when you're sort of down in the dumps, finding motivation can be very difficult. And when you're feeling really good, you know, it's quite easy to be motivated because you have lots of stuff to do that will carry you forward.
Yeah.
What was the transition for you? What changed when you moved and you could sense that you've moved from being in this darker place to this lighter place? What happened? What changed?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's funny you asked that because I was just contemplating on that just the other day, because I've now been back in Australia for 2 years, and as I think about my energy levels now, and it's all about energy, by the way, everything's about energy. As I think about my energy levels now versus my energy levels when I first got here, it was paying attention. It was just paying attention and knowing that in those dark hours, like I said, I'd made the decision and I'd done the homework, for want of a better word, of looking at clearing what was stopping me from moving forward. So, for example, you know, looking much deeper at, well, why was I feeling sad? Why was I feeling depressed? What was causing that? And then finding the right teachers to help me. So I went and saw a couple of great coaches that really helped me with some unconscious, unresolved childhood issues, reading, learning, doing exercises, and then just feeling that, you know, my energy had just shifted, and just feeling that there was more joy, more laughter, more happiness, more health. There was a lightness to my being. So it just naturally progressed. And, you know, I'll be honest again, if people are listening to this, sometimes that can take a little while. Sometimes it can take 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. The most important thing is that we just continue to keep making progress and be willing to look And if something isn't working, then just try again. I'll just give you a quick example. I know a client of mine who has been depressed for 12 years. Now, that's 12 years. And she's kind of been a client on and off. We kind of, you know, it's more, I wouldn't even really say she's a client, actually. She's more a friend, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Depressed on and off for 12 years. And when I speak to this person, I say to them, so what are you doing? And she's like, well, I'm resting. And my response to her is, well, you've been resting for 12 years, so clearly that isn't working. Maybe your problem is that you're not actually doing something with your life. So yes. I guess my point is, if what you're doing isn't working, then just very simply try something different.
You know, just listening to you, I make notes when I do podcasts because certain learnings come out for me. And if I don't write them down, I forget them, you see. So,
yeah.
And I have a saying, by the way, and the saying, it might offend some people, but the saying is rich people write stuff down, poor people remember it.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much true. If you don't write it down, it's gone, hasn't it? And so you've got to write it down. But the thing that I was thinking about was the reticular activation system, which seems to be blinkered a little bit. So when you're feeling down, it's like all the opportunities are still there.
Yeah.
But because you've shut down and your mind has shut down from the opportunity to see them, it no longer sees them. And all it can see is what's directly in front of you, which is you feeling down. So the procession that you use, which is just getting off your butt and going to the gym and reading and doing yoga on a beach or whatever that needs to be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend yoga on a beach here in England.
Yeah.
But whatever that needs to be, just to get you up and out. And even if it's doing something different. I just spoke with a client and she's going through a relationship breakup and she's got a lot of instability. She's worried about seeing her kids. Her husband has taken the house and she's living at her mum's. And so she's very worried about this instability. And my response to her was, go and embrace the instability. Go learn something you've never done, like salsa dancing or pottery class or get up on stage and tell jokes, whatever it needs to be. But just go do something that will shake up your model of the world, because your current model of the world is just, I'm depressed.
Yeah.
Anything to get in there to change that model of the world, it has got to be beneficial for people to move forward.
Yeah. Daniel, man, I totally love what you're saying, and I couldn't agree with you more. If I was coaching that woman, I probably would have said exactly the same thing to her. I would have said, number one, do exactly what you're saying. Embrace the uncertainty. Embrace the instability. Know that it's just where it is that you're at right now. And it's just the unfamiliar in that instance there. And because it's unfamiliar, we make it scary. And we also know from a scientific point of view that the brain, in order to create the future, that looks towards the past and projects that out into the future. So in regards to her lack of stability or her uncertainty, she's thought about all the other times in her life when she's felt uncertain, and she's also bringing that stuff to the table as well.
Yeah.
There's a great metaphor that I heard just recently, again, while things weren't going so well for me. And the metaphor is basically, during the coldest winters, the buffalo stands and faces the snow. It doesn't turn its back on the snow. That's the only way that it can survive the winters. And for most of us, we try and ignore the instability. We try and ignore the difficulties. We try and push them away. We try and pretend that they're not there. And we need to, number one, do exactly what you just said, which is embrace them. And then number two, I read a great book during my difficult times, which was called Letting Go by David Hawkins. And I read this one thing in that book, and I think everybody should read all the time. I read this one thing in that book that completely shifted my perspective. And, you know, we've heard it said before, but I needed to hear it this way, which was to remember that you are not your emotions. So you're not uncertainty. You're not fear. You're not helplessness. You're not resignation. You're also not joy. You're also not proud. You're also not happy. You are more than all of those things. If we're going to get metaphysical and spiritual about it, you are all of those things, but you're choosing to experience that feeling in the moment. So I love that, because, you know, somebody who's depressed doesn't mean that they are depressed. It means I'm a wonderful person that's choosing to feel depression right now. And yeah. So when I heard that, I just thought to myself, okay, well, Johnny Cass, let's just make the decision that we're not going to be unhappy anymore. Let's just make the decision that you're not going to choose to experience unhappiness. Tomorrow you're going to choose to experience happiness. But remember, you're not just happiness. You're not just depression. You're more than all of those things. And so when I had that detachment, things, my energy began to shift as well. I reminded myself, I am not unhappiness. I am not sadness. I am just choosing to experience these things in the moment.
It was the making of the decision that made the change.
Yeah, at some point in time, I had to say to myself, okay, well, I've decided to experience depression and sadness and feeling lost and feeling down and out, whatever you want to call it. You know what? As of tomorrow, I'm just going to start to decide to feel more joy in my life. And whether that be just laughing at myself, or whether that be just laughing with a friend of mine or whatever it might be, I'm just going to do more of that. And when I started doing that, I started, number one, letting go of my need to be perfect. I think a lot of our problems stem from, you know, the fact that we're perfect. The minute, again, when you embrace, I'm going to swear here, your listeners better be ready for this. When we embrace our fucked upness or our imperfections, like the fact that you made a mistake, you embrace it and you go, okay, well, I didn't get that right. Oh, okay. I fucked up financially over here. Oh, okay. I fucked up another relationship over here. That does not mean that I am a fucked up person. It just means that I did something that was fucked up or a mistake or whatever you want to call it. It does not mean that I, as an individual, am a mistake. Because unfortunately, also for a lot of people, the minute somebody says, I made a mistake, therefore I am a mistake, it also unconsciously, for not everybody, but for some people, it unconsciously triggers all their old issues around shame, all their childhood issues around making mistakes. And then what ends up happening is they all of a sudden they fall right back into those old unresolved issues and they believe that they are a mistake. When they believe they're a mistake, just like you said, their filters change, they become depressed, they don't see opportunities, they see more problems, they see themselves as a problem. And let's face it, nobody wants to hang out with a person like that, which means that you get less of the rewards in life, which you then make mean that you're more of a mistake and you're stuck in the pit of misery.
Do you know what's really funny is I still run that program myself. And life for me is amazing. We got married a couple of years ago. We've got a baby who's 7 months, very healthy. We live in Spain near the beach. Life, you know, wealth is there. Cash flow is there. I don't need to work for a living. Life's amazing and we've worked very hard to get there. But I still run that program, and I'll give you an example. So at the villa in Spain, our broadband, our internet, is very, very poor. And so the internet goes down quite often. And I will come out and say, oh, why does everything always turn to shit?
Yeah.
And then I look at that, I'm like, damn, the Wi-Fi's gone down.
Yeah, I love it.
Here you are with all this stuff. And I still do it. So, and you know, financially successful. I've got more time than I know what to do with now, so I don't know what you call that, time freedom, I suppose, is what you'd call it. And yet, even I still run that program. And there'll be people listening that are running more than just that one program. And I think people run multiple programs at multiple times. And that then becomes who they are when it's not who they are, as you've just pointed out.
Yeah.
So when you went back to Australia then, now you run a business at the moment with a business partner. Do you want to just tell me a little bit more about how that got started, what that business is, what made the decision to move into that area?
Yeah, sure. So I'm currently have an online brand in Australia, an online underwear brand in Australia, and we ship globally. And I can't remember exactly the number of countries that we ship over to, but I think it's over 48 countries throughout the planet, which is cool. And, you know, when I came back to Australia, like I said, I was, you know, a little bit unsure of where I was going and what I was doing. I've been speaking and traveling around the world for 15 years. And as glamorous as that may sound, after a while, going from one hotel room to another hotel room can also be lonely. So I might be on the stage with, you know, 1,000 people saying, hey, we want the motivator. We want the guy to inspire us. And you go back to your hotel room and the only person that's greeting you sometimes is your good, trusty friend, loneliness. And after doing that for a while, I kind of was reassessing where I was at. And I had been a silent partner in this business. I'd started this business quite some time ago as a silent director with my business partner. And it seemed like, you know, during my time of trying to figure out where I was going and reassess what I was doing, it seemed like the perfect opportunity to spend a little bit of time in the business and make myself even more overwhelmed than what I was. but the reason why I did that was, you know, I'm pretty big on walking my talk wherever possible. And it's one thing to talk about leadership and personal development and business development and get up on the stage and espouse some theory. It's a whole different ballgame when you're working in your own business and you're trying to generate your own revenue and you're trying to make sales and figure out business and production and creativity and paying wages. So for me, it was a congruency thing. For me, it was, well, if I'm going to talk about business, I also want to be able to run my own successful businesses as well.
Brilliant. And so, and we talked about this just a little bit before we came live, but the pictures that you use in your advertising, you've got the most attractive people on the planet, I suggest, advertising the underwear. And it's, I think that it just works so well in terms of building brand and building audience. And the quality of the models that you have, I think also it's like a complex equivalent. That determines the quality of the product that you're actually selling as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you just hit the nail on the head there. It's like, what's your branding? So I'm not too sure who's listening to this, but whether we've got consultants or coaches or anyone for that matter of the fact, or a company, you know, when everyone is zigging, you've got to try and find a way of zagging. So, you know, for us, we had working to find a niche, working to find a little bit of what Stone Men represents, and getting that out there is certainly about espousing the Australian lifestyle. But yes, you're right, finding that edge and finding that those images that really talk the Stone Men brand and wherever possible staying on brand. So we have a lot of conversations in our office exactly about that. And then me, Johnny Cass, as a trainer and as a speaker, you know, I do exactly the same thing. Like there, you know, sometimes I'll even do a shoot for our company. Why not? I work out, I look good and I feel good. And so I'm like, well, why wouldn't I? And some people have said to me, well, Johnny, gosh, that's really kind of going against the brand of you as a speaker. And I'm like, I couldn't disagree with you more. Like it's easy to find a speaker and a presenter that, you know, wears a shirt and a tie. But when you've got some guy that's happy to get out there and get down to his pants and, you know, get amongst it and keep it real and keep it fun and keep it cheeky and be willing to look ridiculous or be willing to take chances, you know, if Richard Branson can do it, then I can certainly take a little piece of that. And that actually makes me stand out. It gives me a talking point. You're not going to get a conventional speaker or a conventional presenter with me. And I'm very proud of that. That is part of my brand.
And I was going to say, as soon as you started going down that path, I was like, but if it's good enough for Branson dressing as a bride with a beard,
right?
I've got totally no issues. So, Johnny, if people want to see you in your pants, where do they go?
if people want to see me in my pants, they can just Google me, Johnny Cass. That's J-O-H-N-N-I-E, C-A-S-S. Or you can go to my Instagram page, which is the same number. And you know what? I'm very open and I'm very transparent with the people who see me. That's my brand. That's my thing. And if people are afraid of a little bit of flesh, then they need to get over it.
Yeah, I agree completely. And Stone Men, what's the website for that?
The website for Stone Men is www.stonemen.com. That's www.stonemen.com. And you know what? If any of your listeners decide that they want to grab themselves a pair of pants, as you call them in the UK, they can type in JC Love, that's JCLOVE at checkout, and they can get an extra discount from me.
Excellent. Well, what I'll do is I'll put a link on the podcast, and awesome. I'll put the discount code under there as well. So appreciate do you still it. Do coaching for individual one-to-one clients?
I do some coaching for individual one-on-one clients, yes. But this is a part of, and this is kind of the beauty of sometimes sitting down for 6 months. You know, you determine what you do enjoy doing, what you don't enjoy doing, what's going to give you growth, where you want to focus your time and energy. So I do some coaching. I probably have like about, maybe between 5 and 10 hours a week of coaching. My days of doing 20 to 30 hours a week of coaching are behind me, only simply for two reasons. Number one, I don't enjoy it as much as what I used to. It is, my growth in that area, I feel, is done. And number two, if I'm not enjoying it and if I'm not as passionate as what I could be in it, when I'm doing those sort of hours, then my clients are better off seeing somebody else. But do I have some clients? Absolutely. I know what my gaps are. I know what my number of clients are that I like to have. Where I like to focus my attention is on speaking and presenting. It's what buzzes me. It's what juices me up. It's where I love at the end of a 60-minute keynote presentation or a 90-minute keynote or one day or a three-day workshop, having people coming up to me and saying that I've touched their lives excites me, not to mention the creative challenge that I get from that as well.
I've got it. And where are you speaking next? What's coming up for you?
Yeah, so I'm currently, I'm really excited. I'm currently doing some work with an American-based company at the moment called New Peaks Potential, and they're totally awesome. We just did an event together in Melbourne last weekend, and I'm heading off to, let's see, in July, I'm heading off to Malaysia, and then I'm heading off to Singapore to speak at the National Achievers Congress. I think I'm going to be speaking up against the likes of maybe, I think Richard Branson might be there at that event, or Tony Robbins, one of the two of them, I'm not too sure. But that's where I'm heading next, Malaysia and Singapore.
That's fabulous. I love the way that Tony Robbins and Richard Branson are chasing you around the planet to speak next to you. I think that's awesome, John Robbins.
I love it, Daniel. That's awesome. I couldn't agree with you more. I know they'll be queuing up to get my autograph for sure.
I agree. I must confess to it, I do have a little peeve about speakers. And what happens is we speak on stage and Richard Branson comes on. So you come on day one, Branson comes on day two. And then they say, oh, yeah, I shared a stage with Richard Branson. And it's like, well, you didn't, did you? It's like, you know, maybe time didn't exist.
Yeah.
You know, but so it's just one of those little pet peeves. And here in the UK, they use it all the time. It's like, you haven't, have you?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Daniel. And unfortunately, it's, and I use the word unfortunately, it's a celebrity-driven society that we live in. And it all comes down to marketing spin, unfortunately.
It does. And I totally recognise that, and I'm probably guilty of using it myself as well.
Ah, there you go. Now you're telling the truth.
Bill Clinton, my good friend Bill, you know, ex-prez, he did a keynote speech at Business 2012, and so he went on with all his security, like 30, 40 security guys. They cleared out the green room, and then afterwards we went on, because I was working with a wealth creation speaker here in the UK. And afterwards we went on and did the wealth dance, which was very embarrassing. But that was directly after, like literally 5 minutes after Bill Clinton left the stage. So I'm sat here wondering, can I say that I shared a stage with Bill? Probably not, I think.
Well, probably not. But you know what? You could say maybe you were in the same green room as Bill Clinton. How does that sound?
Yeah, that's what I'll do. Let me write that down.
I love that, actually, because what you're doing is a perfect example of what I was talking about before. If everybody else is zigging, then you're zagging. If everybody else is trying to say, oh, hey, I shared the stage with Bill Clinton, where we all know that they technically haven't, whereas if you're saying, well, I didn't share the stage with Bill Clinton, but I shared his green room, well, guess what? Technically, that's actually correct, and it's also a little bit more interesting in my point of view anyway.
I've got a funny story about which I use on stage. I got a job at Dell Computers, and when I was going for the job interview, I had the interview at Heathrow Airport in the VIP lounge, which is an odd place to have an interview. But I've done more bizarre things in more weird places anyway, so it's fine. So I went in, and there in the VIP lounge was Bill Gates. And I thought, here I am going for a job at Dell. I need to go and say to him, you know, can you just give me a hand? So I went up and said, Bill, sorry to interrupt. I know you're busy. I've got this job interview with Dell. We sell a lot of Microsoft products. Can you just come up and go, hi, Dan, how's it going? And he's like, Dan, do you know what? For you, I'll do it. Go on. If it'll help you get this job, help us sell more Microsoft products, I'll do it. Brilliant, brilliant. I'll be just sat over there. So my interviewer came up and I shook hands, sat down with him, and I could see Bill coming over. And Bill came up and goes, oh, Dan, how's it going? And I turn around and I look at Bill and go, Bill, will you stop bothering me.
And how did Bill take that?
Well, it was a made-up. It's a joke. It didn't actually happen. But it was just a funny thing to do, you know, whilst on stage.
I love it.
I love it,
Daniel. Let's start up a comedy podcast. How does that sound?
I don't think it would last very long.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we'll stick to what we know best, right?
I agree. Absolutely. So, in terms of clients that you work with now, what sort of, I know you don't work with many, but what sort of clients, and if someone wanted the great Johnny Cass, is it possible to get access to you as a coach?
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, I usually take my clients on an individual basis. So I normally ask them where they're at, find out a little bit about their story, and see whether or not I can help them. So usually people can just get me on Facebook or they can just email me. I'm happy to give out my email address, which is johnny@johnnycass.com. And, you know, I kind of, at the moment, to be really honest with you, one of the things I'm really enjoying from a coaching point of view are people who seem to have like a reasonable level of success, but for some reason, they're not able to break through to the next level. So it's somebody who is already kind of making, I don't know, 100 grand a year, 150,000, you know, around that ballpark. And they've had some
modest
success.
Is that Australian dollars, whichever.
Okay. And they're having some, you know, the perfect example is somebody like Francis or Vicky, for example. So you've met both of those guys. Francis was a property investor going out there, doing really well in property, was getting messed around with somebody else in a joint venture. Francis had already gotten some level of confidence in what he was doing. And with a little bit more coaching from me, he was able to go out there and start up basically his own training and speaking company to go alongside his property company. And he was a guy who has a stutter and never thought that he'd be able to do that. Like, that's what really juices me. Or Vicky, for example, who was working in corporate, gave up a job, then goes out there and publishes 4 books because she works with me and then does stuff on her own. So people who are somewhat successful but just looking for that little bit extra to tip them over the edge, because I'm really capable of getting in underneath what's going on the surface and finding out what's happening on underneath the bottom. You know, but again, I'm going to give you a completely different example. Working with a client of mine that was in a dysfunctional, codependent relationship for 20 years, practically abusive, physically and emotionally abusive, and helping her through to make the decision to leave her husband, to go solo and go out there and change her life. Like, that also excites me. So it really is an individual scenario based on just where I'm at, what my clients need, and how I can best serve them.
Love it. Okay. And I'm always interested in knowing what a normal day looks like. I know normal, I'd love to know what people's version of normal is for a start, because I have no idea.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what your sort of normal day looks like.
Wow. Well, my normal days can be really, really varied, to be honest with you. As a general rule, I will be up at 6:30 a.m., usually about 6 a.m., I'll always do some meditation first thing in the morning. I'll always do a little bit of reading in the morning. So that's how I always start my day, just to get me in the right headspace. I've got a list of affirmations that I repeat to myself before I even put my feet down on the floor. One of those ones being, I love myself and I love my life, even if I don't believe it, because it just regrounds me. I usually will do some form of exercise first thing in the morning, so that will be the gym or whatever it might be. I usually make sure that I'm at my desk at 9 a.m., just that's how I like to operate. And then my day can be anything from working on my book, researching my book, working on stuff for Stone Men, whether that be marketing, operations, could be coaching a client, and, you know, eating well, looking after myself. I know this is kind of a bit vague, but that's kind of where I'm at. Like, the other day I had a meeting with a speakers bureau. So it really, it's a little bit like yourself. Every day is a different day. I'm planning my day out as much as possible. part of my day might be running avoidance strategies, but realizing I'm running those avoidance strategies and getting back to task. It really depends on what I've got going on. So at the minute I'm working on a book, so I'm doing a lot of research around my book.
What's interesting, listening to you speak for the last sort of 40 minutes or so, is one of the things you do really well is you're always checking in with yourself.
Always.
We'll call it self-talk or analysis. So you're always listening to the words that come out of your mouth and checking in whether you're operating at the right level.
Absolutely. Like, especially being a solopreneur that works for himself, when you don't have, and I'm sure some of your listeners are, when you don't have external deadlines or external feedback or whatever it might be, I'm constantly throughout the day doing internal checks about how I'm feeling, levels of enthusiasm. If I'm not feeling enthusiastic, why am I not feeling enthusiastic? Is it because this is unfamiliar to me? And then my unconscious mind is trying to push me away from doing it. So I'm constantly checking in only because there's usually myself and my business partners around, but they're not always around either. So I've got to keep myself accountable to myself.
It's even worse when you work, it's just you. So for me, you know, I mean, it's beautiful villa, the pool's just there, you know?
Yeah.
And it's sometimes, you know, it's easy to get stuck on Facebook.
Completely.
And, you know, Facebook for me is like my water cooler. So if I need to go speak to someone, I can go to Facebook and have an argument quite easily. Or, because
you're absolutely right. I just read an article about that the other day, that for people who work for themselves, Facebook is our form of socializing these days.
Yeah. It's really funny, isn't it? Something like Facebook is just, and it's not real. There's an advert in the UK at the moment for Facebook, and it's showing all these people having amazing times, going bowling. And I'm like, that's not Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because I get those messages occasionally quite a fair bit, because, you know, I travel a lot and things like that. And I get people message me on Facebook and go, oh, my God, you look like you're having an amazing life. And my response to that is everybody's life looks amazing on Facebook.
It does.
And my suggestion to your listeners, if they're having a tough time at the moment, I would find the balance between being withdrawn, which is okay to do sometimes in life, and spending too much time on social media, because sometimes if we're making comparison between other people's lives and our own lives, that can be both demotivating as well as potentially motivating. And only they will know internally which one it is. And if it's demotivating you, then my suggestion would be that you get off Facebook and start having real open and honest conversations with the people around you about what you're afraid of, and then maybe just one or two things that you're going to do to help overcome those fears. It doesn't have to be 10 things. And even in just having the conversation, you can overcome some of those fears, but then say, okay, well, now what am I going to start to do differently? Otherwise, then that just becomes a conversation about how you're such a victim and how miserable your life is, and that can become addictive in itself.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's an analogy or a metaphor that I use on this, and I used to play a lot of basketball, and yes, I know I'm height challenged, but I still used to play. I used to be pretty good as well. And I should have been a jockey on a horse or something, people have said. But anyway, so it's akin to this. When you're down in the game, and so you sit on a three-point line and you're just putting up 3 points all the time, because it's a lot easier just to jack a three than it is to actually drive in, maybe get hit, an elbow. But it's easier to score when you drive in, but it just takes that much more effort.
Yeah.
Sitting on Facebook is like sitting on a three-point line, just shooting threes, hoping something's going to come out of it.
Yeah.
Instead of getting into the mix and just mixing it up a little bit more and getting, you know, churning it effectively. And that's what people do on Facebook.
Yeah, totally agree with you. I think social media is so funny. You know, one of the things I talk about in my keynote presentations is that we're more connected than what we've ever been before, but we're also more disconnected than what we've ever been before. And depression is on the rise. And I feel that one of the reasons for that is actually because of social media. So social media can be great, but it can also be not so great for us. At the end of the day, any tool that you use is neither good nor bad other than how you choose to use that tool. So make sure we all use those tools, whether it be the phone, whatever it might be, to our advantage wherever possible. And if we make mistakes, and we all make mistakes, as quickly as possible, correct, give yourself, you know, the forgiveness as quickly as you can for making the mistake, and then move on.
Yeah, absolutely. One question I've got for you. When we were talking about your sort of normal day, you mentioned meditation. Now, there's various forms of meditation. Do you do like a clear mind meditation, or is it a...
Well,
I call it quantum goal setting. Is it strategic visioning?
What no,
is it?
I mean, I've got a little bit of ADHD, as my doctor said to me when I went and saw him about it. He said, well, a lot of geniuses have ADHD. And I said, okay, I'll run with that. I'm totally fine with that. So for me, I like to do a balance of two types of meditation. I use a really great program which I find has guided meditation. So it really kind of keeps me, you know, focused on a particular thing. And the woman that I use is someone by the name of Kelly Howell. That's Kelly, H-O-W-E-L-L. And I love her meditations because they're guided meditations. Or if I need, you know, silence, then I will just, you know, sit and be still, pay attention again to the dialogue that's in my mind, notice how busy and chatty it is there in my mind, remind myself that I am not those words, I am actually the person or the thing observing those words. So I use a combination of the tool. But Kelly Howell from www.brainsync.com, I think is awesome for anybody who wants to start meditating, and that's a really great way to get going. Or I use transcendental meditation.
I've got it. Okay. What's next for you in, say, the next 10 years? I mean, you're still a spring chicken. You've got plenty of years left. And I think you're just in spring. You know, we talk about winter and spring, summer, and then autumn. In terms of wealth creation and just life as life in general, I would highly suggest that you're in spring. I think you've been in spring for quite some time, and I actually think maybe you've had a couple of springs all back to back. So what's next for you? What would summer look like in that context, in terms of when you achieve what you want to achieve with Stone Men, whatever that happens to be? What's going to be next? What's the next big thing for you, do you think?
Yeah, I love that analogy there. So thank you, Daniel, for being my teacher tonight. I love that analogy of saying that I'm in spring, because let me assure you, there have been times where I thought that I was in winter. Yeah.
You sowed those seeds in that winter, and that's what people fail to do. And then they get to what they think is spring and wonder why they haven't got anything.
Yeah, I agree with you. And even as I speak and present now, I speak with more depth. You know, sometimes... You know, I look at NLP and I love it as a tool. I really do. However, it is only one tool of many.
Yeah.
And my winters that I had sort of when I came back to Australia was exactly that. It's been the launching pad for my spring. It's been the launching pad for me being a much more powerful and effective coach and a much more powerful and effective speaker. And, you know, when I speak and present now, you know, I just know that the work that I do changes people's lives at a much deeper level. So my summer for me is to bring some of this work at some point in time into the media. Like, I'm personally really bored to death with the benign, mundane, stupid conversations that I just see on television, the programs. What I just think is the dumbing of, you know, a nation, or the dumbing of Western culture, to keep us entertained so that we don't ask ourselves hard-hitting questions about what do we really want to do with our lives. Like, most people are unhappy, they're miserable, and because they're unhappy and because they're miserable, they then go and spend money, they become consumers, they overspend, which keeps them trapped in this cycle of capitalism. Yeah. My belief is that if we start having more thought-provoking conversations, get people more ignited to what's really in their soul, you know, the world can begin to shift. But as long as we're bogged down with stupid shows like Big Brother and the Kardashians and just crap, conversations aren't going to change. So that's what I would like to see happen, making personal development sexy, making it fun, and bringing it out into more of the mainstream world. That would be a great summer for me, making personal development fun and sexy, and people having conversations in the park that talk about what's your purpose in life? What's your, what brings you meaning and what brings you pleasure in life? Not what's happening on the Kardashians, not what's happening on that stupid, a stupid reality TV show. That's what makes it more exciting for me.
And what would you need to do in order to make that happen, do you think?
Well, I kind of got the ball rolling a little bit on that, but the two big things I need to do is, number one, get my book done. Like, that really has to happen this year, and I'm working on that. Number two is then get out there and speak to more speakers, bureaus, and just begin to build my brand. And number three is my online presence at the moment is, to be really honest with you, pretty sucky. So I need to change that as well and make it a bit more relevant, and then get in touch with a producer and start working through that concept.
That's interesting, because we're in June now, towards the end of June when this podcast is being recorded. So what would you need to do to accelerate that? Instead of being the end of the year, so do it in, say, 2 or 3 months. Would that be feasible, do you think? I'm in coaching mode now, but would that be...
Yeah, no, I love it. You know, I'm going to push myself and challenge myself to get my book done by August and get my rebranding done by August. So I really want, I've already started on the book. I'm not too sure the number of words that I've got, but I've got 12 chapters outlined. I've started writing in each of those chapters. So I just need to go back. I need to pick up all of that, and I need to get the first draft done by August.
Brilliant. Well, we're going to check back in with you.
Cool.
To give you some accountability.
Yeah, let's do it.
Make sure you get that done. And I believe you're speaking in Europe in September. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Like I said, you know, one of my greatest joys and one of my greatest pleasures is, you know, I was coaching some of you, or your listeners may or may not know, you know, an awesome guy by the name of Francis Dolly. And I remember the very first time I met Francis, I was like, wow, you know, this path could be a difficult path for him. Then I had the great pleasure of coaching him and, you know, seeing his life transform. And he invited me to go and speak to 100 of his students, gosh, a couple of months ago. And at that event there, I invited his students to come and join me and 15 others in Portugal. So, yeah, come September, I'm going to be speaking in Portugal, running my 4-day NLP mastery program, which encompasses everything that I've learned over the last 15 years professionally, as a speaker, as a motivator, and as a coach.
Brilliant. And where do people find out more information, prices, dates, and so on?
Yeah, if they want to know more about that, they can just, again, email me directly at Johnny, J-O-H-N-N-I-E. So that's Johnny at JohnnyCass, C-A-S-S.com.
That's perfect. I'm just making a note of this myself so that I can put that as a link so people can just send you an email directly off the website.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that.
Just for anybody who's thinking about a shift in mindset and attending the 4-day NLP mastery, when I first got into NLP, I was going through a situation where my children had been taken away from me by my ex-partner. And it was a horrific, horrific time for me. And the NLP stuff that I learned, what's really interesting when you go to an NLP course is that everybody in the room is or has been broken at some point or are still going through. And instead of going to see a psychotherapist, they join an NLP course instead. And that's exactly what I did. And that's now why I coach other people through NLP, because I've seen the benefits.
Yeah.
But for anybody who needs a shift in mindset, and what you tend to find when you get a shift in mindset is you get a shift in results. Because everything starts with the mind. If you think you can, you can. If you think you can't, then you won't, sort of thing. So if anybody is listening and has considered doing NLP, then I'd highly recommend this. I've seen Johnny as a teacher, and I know what the NLP stuff can do. So I'd highly, highly recommend that. Johnny, I'd just like to thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Oh, Daniel, you're welcome, mate. It's really a great pleasure and a great honour to be on here. And, you know, again, I love that we're doing this call, man. I love that. You know, I can't remember what year you attended my program, but to, you know, see you doing this and sending this valuable information out there, to know that once upon a time you were struggling, you had some challenges, and to know that now, however many years later, you've contacted me and we've done this, like, to me, that just makes my heart sing. That just lets me know that I'm loving what I'm doing, and most importantly, that you've put into practice what I've taught you. I'm sure you've had your ups, you've had your downs like everybody else. But I'm very, very grateful that you reached out to me and that we've made this call.
That's awesome. Johnny, thank you very much once again. And we're going to check back in with you to make sure that you've got your book done.
I know I've just put that down in my diary. I better make sure I follow through on that, otherwise I'm screwed. Maybe we'll make sure we have another call and we can talk all about the book.
We will. We'll do that for sure.
All right,
thank you very much, Johnny. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks, Daniel, and thanks to all our listeners for being on the call today.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.